Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to another week, another exciting episode of the Daily Caller podcast. This one for the 27th day of January 2019. It's a Monday. God, Mondays suck. But this week is going to be very, very busy, I imagine. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, downloading all of that good stuff, and sending me emails and all that fun stuff. It is, it's always great to hear from you guys because it makes me know, even though, you know, get the numbers every once in a while and you're like, okay, there are people listening. It's not just me talking to Katz and Quinn, but to hear from real live human beings is super cool. Because it lets me know, it doesn't put a face to it, but it puts a human being behind it. And that is, that's really, really cool. Because you're just sitting on the internet, you know, talking. Well, you're not sitting on the internet. You're posting it on the internet. You get the gist. It's bizarre. As Quinn is kind of throwing a weird temper tantrum over there for attention. Anyway, you can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Thanks for all the kind words about the interview with Elizabeth Harrington of the RNC. It was fun talking to her. It's fun. It's always fun talking to Liz. It's always fun getting the insider's perspective and a little bit of ability to pick the brain of the people who are, you can give them all the ideas you want. But if they don't act, they're the ones who get to choose what the hell to do. So I appreciate that and you and everything else. I don't think I have any other housekeeping issues to deal with. Not that I can think of. Nope. I don't have anything that I can give away. I don't have any. I'll try and get back to getting some signed books. Cause I really want to. I like giving away signed books, but just not this week. Okay, let's get into the news. I don't know. First off, I got to make a comment about the death of Kobe Bryant and his daughter and others in a helicopter crash out in California. It's just horrible. A horrible situation. I can't pretend that I'm wildly impacted as a sports fan. I'm not. I do not like basketball. I just have never really enjoyed basketball. I was obviously, I'm aware of basketball. I know who Kobe Bryant was. I know how good he was. I know what he brought to the game. I knew all the controversies and everything. You couldn't escape it. But as a human being and as a father, that he and his daughter died. He died at 41 years old, which is terrifying. It's horrible. Leaving behind a wife and children. On Saturday night, I was watching the news and I noticed that LeBron James had passed Kobe Bryant for third or fourth or whatever it is on the all-time scoring list in NBA history. And I saw a report on that. And I just thought, I didn't care. And I still don't care. I really don't like basketball. It doesn't interest me. But I woke up Sunday morning, breakfast with the family and all of that, and then saw trending on Twitter, like, RIP Kobe and Kobe Bryant this, and I'm like, geez, you know, it takes weird things to set off Twitter, you know, who knows? Just whatever takes off, and nobody can bottle it, nobody can figure it out. But I thought it was all about LeBron James surpassing Kobe Bryant on the list. Like, that's a little harsh, you know, RIP Kobe. Like, I don't know why that would be RIP Kobe, but, you know, there have been weirder things trending on Twitter so it didn't bother me. And I started looking at other, you know, in tweets in my timeline, and I saw Kobe Bryant is reported to have died in a helicopter crash. And I was like, holy shit, That is that real? And I was impacted the same way I was impacted, you know, by somebody, you know, I didn't dislike Kobe Bryant, but I just didn't have any feelings about him one way or the other. It was just like everybody else, every other sad story you hear about, it's like, oh my God, is that real? Can that be real? I didn't know Kobe. I never met Kobe, was never going to meet Kobe, but it was like, there's a weird sense of disbelief. It's the power of celebrity, I think, that even people you don't particularly follow, yeah, not that you don't care, saying you don't care about somebody is the wrong word. That it just, I just don't give a damn about what they did. I didn't know them. I didn't dislike him. I didn't dislike him. But it was just surreal. The power of celebrity permeates even barriers to things like me not liking basketball, that I'm sitting there and I'm sort of in awe, like in shock, like in denial, really. I kept on waiting for the news to break that this was wrong or a hoax or a prank or something. I don't know what I was waiting for. So I can only imagine what people who were fans of Kobe Bryant, I can't fathom family and friends, but fans of it. But I do want to say a note about the media coverage of it, because it's horrible, it's sad, it's awful. But it's not a breaking story that is developing that during the time that it was breaking, that is warranted of wall-to-wall coverage and wild speculation and scrambling to get information. And that's where we as a society go too far with the celebrity thing. There was a reporter out in Los Angeles who reported that Kobe Bryant was on the helicopter with all of his daughters and went out and spread that rumor on the air. There's no verification of that. There was no proof of that. And thank God it didn't turn out to be true. Sad, tragic that one was on the helicopter with him. They were apparently going to a basketball camp or something. But to just be so irresponsible in the name of a developing story where it is, if you just wait, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It's not a situation where there is a massive, you know, firefight in the streets of downtown New York City where people need to be warned where to avoid and look out and get out of the way. There's an active shooter situation or bombs going off or, God forbid, a chemical attack or whatever like that. It's not that. See, that's a really weird word choice, but it's not how I mean it, but it's the word I'm going to use is important. It's not that important in the grand scheme of things that we know everything immediately. There's nobody's behavior who can be impacted by you getting information out there. And so much of what the news does in situations of breaking news is report first and verify later. It's usually in shooter situations or tragedies, they're just desperate to be out there and in front of it, to get the credit for having broken the story. And I think that the pursuit of that is really what causes so many so-called journalists to just fling everything that they can, everything they hear, every rumor, every innuendo, on the off chance that it's right. Look, you can always apologize later, but if it's right, you want to be the first one to break this story because you want to own this story. And that is perverting journalism. Yes, it was important that people know what happened, but they didn't need to know what happened immediately. If you had waited a half an hour to verify information, you could have gotten the story right. You might not have gotten the story first, but you would have gotten the story right. And far too much of journalism is about being first, because there are no longer consequences for getting it wrong. We see routinely stories being wildly wrong on air. And I'm not just talking about breaking news stories. I'm talking about real political stories. Oh, you know, the president threatened senators saying that their heads will be on a pike if they go against him. And senators to a person up there on the Hill said that didn't happen. That's not true. This is not right. But Adam Schiff used that in his closing argument. Why? Because it was reported by the newspaper. Then it was reported by the New York Times or New York Magazine or whatever it was. Who cares? It doesn't matter. They're all the same. It is somebody said it to me privately, off the record or anonymously, however, on background, and I'm just going to run with it. It doesn't matter. You can't prove it. You can't prove that I'm wrong, is the attitude that reporters seem to have. Now, you can't prove that I'm wrong. The source told me this in confidence. The source told me this anonymously or on background. I couldn't attribute it to them. So you wouldn't even know how to verify it. Think about how much of the news that you've seen in the Trump administration. Weirdly, curiously, it's a phenomenon of the Trump administration. It's not a phenomenon that started in the Obama administration. It was anonymous sources. Anonymous sources. What do anonymous sources give you? Anonymous sources can be wildly useful and important because they can give you information that you can't get anywhere else. And it's a powerful tool. It's the only way information can get out, because if you put your name on it, you could be fired. So you don't want to put your name on it because you don't want to be fired or go to prison or whatever, but you think the world needs to know. In the Obama and the Trump administration, the anonymous sources are things that are not really important. There's nothing illegal going on. Nobody would go to jail if these anonymous sources were true. But they want the story out there to damage the president. So you have to not only weigh what anonymous sources say as far as the importance of it, but the rationale for reporting it. President picks his nose and wipes it underneath the Resolute desk. Is that something the world needs to know? No. That hasn't been reported yet, but if somebody thought they could make Trump look bad by doing it, they would. But they did report that he has a button in the Oval Office that if he pushes it, somebody comes out and delivers him a Diet Coke. You know, when the president has ice cream at a luncheon, everybody gets one scoop, the president gets two scoops. That was a reported thing. That's the down to the level of insignificance and insanity that the media is willing to go to try and somehow embarrass Donald Trump. Well, I'll tell you, I've been in lunches with high-level people, not the President of the United States, and when dessert comes, if you want two scoops of ice cream and you do the very basic thing and you grab the waiter or waitress and say, can I have two scoops of ice cream? Guess what's going to happen? You're going to get two scoops of ice cream. So theoretically, that story was dumb to begin with. But if you just thought about it rationally or done your homework or had any clue about how human beings work and how it works in Washington, D.C., you say, oh, the president must like two scoops of ice cream. Therefore, the staff knows that the president likes two scoops of ice cream. Maybe either by the president asking for an extra scoop of ice cream a couple of times and then they just picked up on it. Or the president says, hey, I really like ice cream, so when we have ice cream, give me two scoops. But somehow it became a story because an anonymous source told somebody something. Anonymous sources are used as weapons. They used to be used for information. Now they're used as weapons because the people who are impacted by anonymous sources have no defense against them. So many of the stories about Donald Trump's presidency that were attributed to anonymous sources have been unambiguously proven to be false, denied by everybody in the room on the record, in a lot of cases denied by the facts and the circumstantial evidence, but they are still out there, still refusing to correct them, these journalists. You don't have to be first. You don't have to be fastest. You have to be right. And that's no longer a priority for journalism, whether it is reporting on the President of the United States or on the tragic death of Kobe Bryant. You want to be first. Correct it later, because you used to be fired. If you were wrong, if you were found to have reported something that you couldn't prove, you would be fired as a reporter. Now you're not fired as a reporter. You're rewarded as a reporter. You're given a cable news contract. Look up Washington Post and New York Times reporters and see how many of them have contracts with CNN or MSNBC. Look at them. No matter, look up corrections, look up false stories from either one of those two publications. You will find dozens upon dozens upon dozens of stories of corrections, retractions, or false stories they simply still to this day let stand. And if you look at the bylines of those, you will find a lot of people who have cable news contracting jobs. There is no such thing as journalism anymore. How can Maggie Haberman be an honest, unbiased reporter when she's doing it in writing, but she is an analyst, which by very definition means you have to give your opinion when she goes on CNN? So we're theoretically, we're not supposed to, realistically, I mean, we're not supposed to know Maggie Haberman's personal politics. But there's no doubt about what Maggie Haberman's personal politics are, because she's paid significantly by CNN to tell the world her thoughts on everything. And you'd have to be dead to not be able to pick up on it. So this guy out in Los Angeles, I know he's not going to be fired. He's not going to face any consequences. He was still reporting on it, but he reported something that was false. He didn't bother to check it, because it was too good to check. And here's Quinn come rolling up. You want to say hello to everybody, Quinn?
It's gonna get no mommy, gonna get no mommy.
No, mommy's upstairs. What are you doing?
It's gonna stop getting a mommy and Bailey.
Yeah, mommy and Bailey are upstairs. You know that you're way more popular on this podcast than I am?
It's gonna sound like a Cowboy.
Yes, everybody is wildly familiar. And you now like the movie Frozen, so it's another reason to hate Disney. You like the movie Frozen?
Yes, Frozen, go, Olaf.
Yes, Frozen, Olaf. All right, go and play. Daddy's on a rant about the media. Because they really are terrible here. And I guess leading the pack, before I stop talking about this subject, leading the pack was TMZ, the gossip blog, it's not the National Enquirer per se. It is the paparazzi's hub. They apparently reported that Kobe Bryant had died in a helicopter crash before the police had a chance to notify the family. The other family, and Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter. So who knows? Maybe the family found out because some family friend saw that before the police could get there to notify them. They're getting phone calls. Oh, my God, did you hear? I'm so sorry. What are you talking about? You imagine the horror of that? You imagine the horror of that? And the horror of that inflicted by a website because they knew they would get clicks, because they knew that the traffic would go through the roof, because they knew they could make money. They could just wait an hour. They could have the story ready to go and wait and say, okay, now, once the families had been notified. But no, and I guarantee you, there's a baseball coach and his wife, and I believe one of their kids were also on the helicopter. 9 people in total died, not to mention the helicopter pilot. You imagine you're the spouse or the child of the helicopter pilot. If your mom or dad, I don't know what they were, but if your mom or dad were going to be flying Kobe Bryant and you live in Los Angeles, I imagine that you'd be pretty excited and they'd be pretty excited and they might tell you ahead of time, guess what I'm doing tomorrow? I'm flying Kobe Bryant somewhere. Or if you're the baseball coach going up with the Bryants, you know who we're flying with tomorrow? I get to hang out with Kobe Bryant. And then you hear, Kobe Bryant's helicopter crashed and everybody was dead. Why? Because TMZ could get some clicks and the world needed to know that way. The world never needs to know anything that way when it involves human tragedy. But human tragedy is monetized. It's like every other aspect of life. I don't begrudge people for trying to take advantage of it. I don't begrudge people for taking advantage of it and rushing to it. I did a little research. I'm always messing around on eBay, seeing what's for sale out there. And I, like I said, I collect baseball cards and whatever. So I just like to see what things are going for. And I looked last night. Now, these numbers are not complete because the time is West Coast, so I'm sure it went up more. But more than 1,300 signed Kobe Bryant cards sold yesterday. 1,300. There's, I have 200 results per page. It was 1,300 of them, and then it went to, you know, the previous days when you look in the sold things. I'm sure it's 1,400 or 1,500 by now, considering that the time that eBay runs on is West Coast time. So people saw an opportunity and took advantage of it. Human beings are human beings. I don't begrudge them that. But for money, there's not a lot we wouldn't do. It's a sad commentary, but it's an accurate commentary on who we are as a society. Because the day before, there were like five. In the days before, there weren't very many because he was in the news the day before when LeBron James had surpassed him on the all-time scoring list. So I don't know. I don't know what I'd ask people to maybe think where we are as a society. I can't say look in the mirror because I didn't have any, you know, I didn't go out and sell Kobe Bryant stuff. I don't have any Kobe Bryant stuff. And I don't begrudge people who did go out and say, well, now this is worth a lot more, especially right now. You got to strike while the iron is hot and you've got to sell. I get that. But as a society, when you put all of this together, when you look at it from a just step back and look at it, I don't think that reflects very well on us as a society and our culture in general. I just don't. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't begrudge people capitalism at all. I don't honestly know, to be perfectly frank with you. If I'd had a whole bunch of Kobe Bryant autograph stuff that, you know, didn't really mean anything to me, but I'd bought it for an investment, I can't say for certain that I wouldn't have put it on eBay yesterday and tried to capitalize on the situation. But that's just a small piece of the puzzle, in the media puzzle. And the Grammys did massive tributes to Kobe Bryant. I mean, I know they were held where the Lakers played their games, but maybe Kobe Bryant recorded an album. I know he was friends with a lot of people, but I still didn't really understand the NBA tributes I get, but the music ones I didn't get. There were big names in music who died this year, who died recently, who didn't get the sort of send-off and tribute that a basketball player got. Maybe they were friends with him? I don't know. I'm not going to tell somebody how to grieve. It just struck me as, the whole thing struck me as odd. We still don't know much, but that doesn't stop people from reporting on things and taking advantage of it. Maybe as a society that's a good thing, but I don't know that that's a good thing. Anyway, there are other things in the news to get to, and we're going to get to them now. But first, I got to tell you about Life Change Tea. Look, if you're dragging, if you're finding that you just don't have the energy that you used to, I got a solution for you. Life Change Tea from GetTheTea.com. It helps clean you out. Our food is heavily processed now. People don't really realize how much processing goes into our food to stretch it, to prolong its life, whatever they do. Well, some of that, it costs nutrition. You need to be able to absorb the nutrition that you do put in your body. And part of the reason you're not able to do that is what's stuck inside your body. And that's where Life Change Tea comes in. It's sort of the squeegee for your innards. Think of it that way. Use as directed. You get a month's supply, so you don't have to rush through it. And you drink a cup a day. And it makes a big difference. It cleans you out, keeps you regular and cleans you out. And then, boom, suddenly your body has more square footage or square inches probably to absorb the food from the nutrition from the food that you consume. It really does make a difference. My energy levels have gone up significantly, and I'm trying to keep up with two kids, both of whom are walking now. It's nuts. It's amazing how quickly they grow and how much energy they consume and produce, and you need to keep up with that. And that's where Life Change Tea comes in. You go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Choose your flavor. Try it for a month. Give it a shot. What have you got to lose? At checkout, enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K. Hit apply. You get a great deal, free shipping. You can't beat it. Use as directed. Do not overdo it. And see if you don't find yourself with more energy. If you don't, then never use it again. But I suspect you will. I know you will. I do. And you'll be back for more. GetTheTea.com. That is GetTheTea.com. Life change tea. It will change your life. Okay, let's see. Impeachment news. Impeachment news. There's so much impeachment news. The left is very excited because they think they've got themselves another massive scoop, another smoking gun. They think they keep on thinking that they're going to find the silver bullet that takes out Donald Trump. He's such a meanie. He's so awful. He must be destroyed. That's all they need. That's all they care about. That's all they want. They've got to go and do this. And well, the latest and great, I mean, history is littered with these people who have been put up on a pedestal as sort of the, this is the one that's going to take out Donald Trump. This time it is John Bolton. Yes, the mustache. Ambassador John Bolton, former national security advisor. He is coming out with a book because everybody comes out with a book. It's so amazing. Look, if you've got something to say, John Bolton doesn't seem to think, here's the perfect way to put it. John Bolton, allegedly, his lawyers are denying that anybody's actually seen the book except for inside the White House. The New York Times claims to have heard from people who John Bolton gave the book to check out. They deny they gave it to anybody. Well, rather than me paraphrase it, let me just read you what the New York Times reported. President Trump told his national security advisor in August that he wanted to continue freezing $391 million in security assistance to Ukraine until officials there helped with investigations into Democrats, including the Bidens, according to an unpublished manuscript by the former advisor John R. Bolton. The president's statement, as described by Mr. Bolton, could undercut key elements of his impeachment defense, that holding up aid was separate from Mr. Trump's request that Ukraine announce investigations into his perceived enemies, including former Vice President Bolton, blah, blah, blah. Mr. Bolton's explosive account of the matter at the center of Mr. Trump's impeachment trial, the third in American history, was included in drafts of a manuscript he circulated in recent weeks to close associates. Now, that's the curious part. He circulated this draft to close associates, allegedly, but he and his lawyers, through his lawyers, said that he has not shown it to anybody after this story broke. It's weird. How could that be? Which one is it? Is John Bolton lying or is the New York Times lying? He also sent a draft to the White House for a standard review process for some current and former administration officials who write books. That's standard. You can't write a book. You have to make sure that everything is okay to put in there. Now, he submitted this at the end of December, so it hasn't even been a full month. Some people are trying to make this into a big conspiracy that, oh, Donald Trump is using the power of the White House in this review process to try and screw up John Bolton's release date, which is apparently tentatively scheduled for March 17th. What's curious about this is that John Bolton's page on Amazon for the book just happened to go live yesterday as well. It's what a hell of a coincidence if John Bolton did not leak this book or leak this information. The book presents an outline of what Mr. Bolton might testify to if he's called as a witness in the Senate impeachment trial, people said. The White House could use the pre-publication review process, which has no set time frame, to delay or even kill the book's publication or omit key passages. Well, that's the point of the review. This is circumventing the review. this leak. So the idea that somehow, oh, Donald Trump's trying to play politics and trying to undercut book sales. I don't think Donald Trump really gives a damn if John Bolton sells a bunch of books. Call me crazy, but I don't really think that's what the problem is. And John Bolton, if he wrote this in the book, that clearly means, and we don't know because nobody has confirmed that there's anything like this in the book. If that's the case, then John Bolton clearly believes that nothing he has to say would be covered by legitimate claims of his executive privilege, which, as Byron York of the Washington Examiner pointed out, would mean that he would be pretty much free to go and tell his story wherever he wanted. Maybe not in the well of the Senate as a witness, because they get to decide who gets to be a witness, but there would be nothing whatsoever to stop John Bolton from giving, say, an interview to any outlet, any journalist, any host, any personality he so wanted. But he hasn't yet. Why would he not do that if he's so concerned, as the New York Times implies? If he's so very concerned by this whole thing, then why is he only willing to tell his story when he can make a buck off of it? There's a whole bunch of stuff about this that doesn't really add up. It's all very coincidental that this story happens to leak when it did, the Sunday before, really. I mean, they had 2 hours on Saturday, but the Sunday before Trump's representatives start their defense of impeachment. Does anybody believe in coincidences that much that they think, well, this is just how the cookie crumbles. This is how it all falls down. This is how someone in the White House allegedly leaked this. They really think that's going to play? Well, Breitbart has an interesting story here that might said shed some light onto it. I don't know, but let's see what the story says, shall we? Quote, a source close to the Trump administration informs Breitbart News that Army Lieutenant Colonel Yevgeny Vindman, remember Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, the hero of the House impeachment trial who didn't really stand up to cross-examination, said that they... that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, a senior ethics lawyer for the a source close to the Trump administration informs Breitbart News that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, a senior ethics lawyer for the National Security Council, is in charge of reviewing all publications. It was Alexander Vindman. Boy, I really screwed that up. Alexander Vindman's brother is in charge of clearing publications, books by former administration officials. What? His brother Yevgeny, the Vindman, screwed me up. The official added that Yevgeny Vindman could have seen former National Security Advisor John Bolton's draft manuscript after it was submitted for pre-publication review at the end of December. The review is a standard process, blah, blah, blah. But wouldn't that be interesting? Isn't that curious how all of these same people and people with ties to the same people all end up involved in this, even tangentially? I don't know if Alexander Vindman's brother, Yevgeny, is involved in leaking this or not. I just find it curious. Just like I find it curious how the whistleblower managed to go to Adam Schiff's office before going to anybody else. And it just so happens that Adam Schiff had just hired a bunch of friends of the so-called whistleblower in the weeks leading up to that. And it also just so happens to be weird that the whistleblower, all in air quotes, the whistleblower, who is supposed to acknowledge in their whistleblower reports any contacts with members of Congress on this subject, he omitted any contacts with Congressman Adam Schiff's staff. Now, Schiff says that he never met with the whistleblower, and in fact, to this day, swears he doesn't know who the whistleblower is. His staff only informed him that a whistleblower exists, and they advised him to get a lawyer and file a report, and did not get into any of the details whatsoever. Anybody believes that? I have some oceanfront property in Arizona to sell you. Yet all of these things are just coincidence, as we're supposed to believe. It's total, you know, it could have happened to anybody. it's just like, you know, you had a long lost brother, you didn't know you had a twin brother, and you just happened to sit next to each other on the same Southwest Airlines flight. That seemed believable. That's a coincidence, that situation. But all of these things, one thing could be a coincidence. Two things, it's a little suspect. Three things or more, and you start to think that maybe there's something else going on down here. Maybe there's something else going on. The swamp strikes back is sure as hell what it seems like to me. That's just me. But again, if John Bolton thinks he has relevant information that the country needs to know, he doesn't need to sell it to the country at $29.95 a pop. He could go to any place, anywhere. He wouldn't go to Fox News. He probably shouldn't go to Fox News. He may end up on Rachel Maddow. It'd be very funny to watch Rachel Maddow try to interview John Bolton. It really... his Fox News, who's not going to be friendly to him, or the rest of the media, who has never been friendly to him, who will suddenly try to be friendly to him. It'll be kind of funny. Do you go to the den of vipers that have tried to ruin your life, your whole life, your whole adult life? Do you go to them and say, "Why, have I got a story for you?" No, you probably go, "To hell with it. I'm going to be otherwise unemployable after this, so I need to come out and come up with something wonderful." He needs a book that's going to sell. And he thinks maybe he's got a book that'll sell here. We'll have to see. But I find it all this timing very curious that, oh, geez, this information just happened to come out right before the White House starts its defense. Just the same day that the Amazon page goes live, it just so happens that this story leaks to the New York Times. We don't know where it could have possibly come from. Oh, and by the way, did I mention that the team that represents John Bolton, the agents, the literary agents, just so happen to be the same literary agents that represent James Comey, that have leaked things to the New York Times on behalf of James Comey in the past? And they're following the sort of same playbook that they did with James Comey. Isn't that all just an amazing coincidence? Yes, of course it is. I'm sure there's nothing nefarious going on. No plotting, no planning, no conspiring, no coordinating. Nothing whatsoever. It's just a strange coincidence. I will say this, though. If John Bolton has something to say, come out and say it. Don't charge the American people to hear you say it. Come right out and say it. If you've got a story to tell, if you've got this massive corrupt tale about Donald Trump, come on out and tell the world. I think we'd all appreciate it. I was wrong about the cover price. I'm looking at the Amazon page now. It's not $29.95. It's $32.50. Those agents don't come cheap. They're going to try and capitalize on this all they possibly can. But Ambassador Bolton, we've spoken on quite a few occasions in the past. I've interviewed him before, not on this show, but on radio. If you have something to say, you can get in touch with me. The contact is still the same. Or you can go to any number of other places. We'll give you a fair shake, but don't charge the American public to find out these things. If it is so pressing, if it is so prescient, if it is so important, tell us now. Unless you're just doing this for money. In which case, you'd better make a lot of it, because I don't... Well, maybe you could work at the Brookings Institution. They seem to... They won't like you very much either. See, you're kind of a man without a home. Unless you come out with the truth and some proof and something damning, you seem like an opportunist right now. That's not really what you want to be, I wouldn't think. That's not a position that is particularly enviable or navigable. But hey, what are you going to do? All right, in impeachment news, I want to play a couple of things that the Democrats are really just kind of freaking nuts over. They're insane. They've really lost their mind. On the floor of the House of Representatives on Friday, as they made their final closing arguments, and my God, it couldn't come soon enough. And this is the Democrats made many, many strategic errors in their presentation. First and foremost, and the biggest one, was taking so long to do it. Taking up so much time. It was like 21 or 22 hours or something ungodly like that. Even if you said everything you knew or alleged about what the president was alleged to have done, you know, and with no challenge, it wouldn't take you 21 hours to make that case. The reason it took 21 hours, 21 plus hours, is because they kept repeating themselves. They were not playing to the jury in the room. They were playing to the audience at home. They wanted the American people to see it. So they said, well, not everybody's going to be watching all the time. So every couple of hours, we're going to cycle through this same old crap. We got to find a new way to say it, play the same clips over and over, take things out of context, and just go over this thing like it's a big merry-go-round. That's why they did it. That's why they took so long. There was nothing introduced on day one that they did, or on day three that they didn't already introduce on day one and two, and so on and so forth. They kept repeating themselves because they wanted to try and catch as many people as possible watching the TV, thinking somehow it would be riveting rather than quickly skipped over. And that's why they did it. It's bad. It was a strategic failure. But they did it. And doing that, you have to find, when you become repetitive, you have to try to find new and creative ways to make the same argument. And that, when you're dealing with a partisan hack, writing and conspiring inside an echo chamber, can lead to people going over the line, can lead to people saying dumb things. And that's where Jerry Nadler comes in. On Friday, he called the president of the United States a dictator. This is, of course, a common theme amongst the left, that Donald Trump is just somehow, he's Hitler without the swastikas. He's a monster. He's not going to leave office ever. He's abusing his power. He's taking over the entire country. They never point out that they're free to say these things. The journalists who say Donald Trump is a threat to the First Amendment and to a free press are all roaming the countryside free. Nobody's doing anything to them. Fewer journalists, meaning zero, have been arrested in the United States under Donald Trump than under Barack Obama, where quite a few journalists, well, one was arrested and held in prison for a while because he wouldn't reveal his source, James Risen of the New York Times. 20 journalists at the Associated Press were spied on, had their phones tapped. James Rosen was spied on, had his phone tapped, had his email tapped. All of that happened under Barack Obama. There was no griping and grousing about, oh, it was a massive threat to the First Amendment. But Donald Trump sends a mean tweet, that's a massive threat to the First Amendment. So they've now taken to saying that Donald Trump is a monster, a dictator. That's fine for MSNBC and CNN panel shows. That's standard fare. It's, in fact, the only way to get invited back is to be more outrageous than the person whose, you know, chair or butt made the chair you're sitting in warm before you got there. That's it. You've got to outrage somebody else, and you'll get invited back. Doing it as a House manager in a closing argument and an impeachment trial, or an opening argument in an impeachment trial, not particularly smart, because the people you need to reach are sitting right in front of you, but the people you want to reach are on the other side of the camera. Democrats strategically should have focused a very strong case, as best as they could muster with the turd that they had, on four Republican senators to try to get to the next step that they say they desperately want, which is witnesses, which would be John Bolton, etc., etc. Instead of doing that, they tried to win the PR war. Here's Jerry Nadler basically telling you that you're too stupid to realize that we are living in a totalitarian regime and all hope is lost. The president is a dictator.
President Trump is an outlier. He is the first and only president ever to declare himself unaccountable and to ignore subpoenas backed by the Constitution's impeachment power. If he is not removed from office, If he is permitted to defy the Congress entirely, categorically, to say that that subpoenas from Congress in an impeachment inquiry are nonsense, then we will have lost, the House will have lost, the Senate certainly will have lost, all power to hold any president accountable. This is a determination by President Trump that he wants to be all-powerful. He does not have to respect the Congress. He does not have to respect the representatives of the people. Only his will goes. He is a dictator. This must not stand, and that is why, another reason, he must be removed from office.
He is a dictator. That is why he needs to be removed from office. He is a dick. Do you feel like you're living in a totalitarian regime? Can you spot any way, except for maybe in the size of your paycheck, that your life has been infringed upon by the existence of Donald J. Trump living at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and being president of the United States? Can you? I bet you could. With Barack Obama, I bet you that your health insurance premiums went up rather significantly. Or you're one of the 5 million people who lost your health insurance because the Obama administration deemed your choice to be insufficient for you. I bet you could find more people impact, except for maybe the people who've been arrested at Antifa riots. But other than that, whose life has been upended by Donald Trump being president of the United States? Anyone? See, the rhetoric does not match the reality. That's the problem with Democrats. They're trying to find new and creative ways to reach the people at home, to try and scare the people at home, and they just can't help themselves. They go over the top. Because that's who they are. That's what they do. Now, all of this hyperventilating about, oh my goodness, we've got a totalitarian living in the White House. We're in a dictatorship. It's not resonating with the American people. It's not resonating with the American people. The only polls that find that the American people want Donald Trump removed, or the American people want witnesses, when you look into the numbers of the polls, into the data, into they're oversampling Democrats dramatically because they believe that there are more Democrats in this country than there actually are. There are more Democrats, registered Democrats, than registered Republicans, but not by the percentages. They're weighting Democrats by like 8, 10, 12 percentage points over Republicans. That's not reality. They get maybe 5 points, maybe 5 points, and that's it. But they live in an echo chamber. They live in a world where they can't fathom how anybody could continue to be a Republican. Ugh. The Republican Party is hemorrhaging people, they think. We'll find out in November. But this hyperventilating is not paying off with the American people. The other day, David Axelrod was on CNN. He ran the Obama campaign. Used to be a journalist. Then he went to work for Barack Obama. Nobody said anything about it. Now he's a political science professor at the University of Chicago, I think, or maybe it's Northwestern. Doesn't matter. They're all the same. And he's a CNN contributor. He partook in a focus group of Democrats. Now, if impeachment is going to resonate anywhere with anyone, you would think it would be with Democrats. They have been told by their leadership that Donald Trump is a monster. He's a threat. He must be destroyed. If they're not going to believe their own elected leadership, who would? Well, it turns out that they do not believe their own leadership. Listen to what David Axelrod had to say on CNN the other day about how badly Democrats are doing on this impeachment story.
Wait, but let me just say one thing, Aaron.
Yeah.
I was in a focus group this morning for the Institute of Politics here at the University of Chicago with some Chicago Democratic voters, and it was chilling to hear them talk about this because impeachment didn't even come up. No one volunteered it for 80 minutes into the focus group. You know, we're right in the middle of the trial.
80 minutes in a focus group with Democratic voters in Chicago, and impeachment never came up. They didn't care. Democrats didn't care. This is a PR disaster. This is a strategic disaster for Democrats. There is very few people, and those few people who are out there talking about this have a vested interest in it. If you notice, the candidates don't really talk about it all that much on the campaign trail either, because their internal numbers are telling them the same thing. People don't care. People do not care. The ratings have gone down significantly every single day this has dragged out. We'll see what happens later today. We won't find out until tomorrow, so we won't be able to talk about it on the show until Wednesday. But I'll be curious to know how many people watch the White House's opening statement. I don't think it's going to be that many. I suspect there'll be a slight uptick for a while. I'll be curious to see how much time the White House takes in its defense. They've got to get pretty good. I think they've got to put on a compelling case. I don't think it's going to be an easy tap-in putt for them. But in general, they have to realize the mistakes that the Democrats made and not repeat them. Get in there 5, 6, 8 hours maximum. Maybe you spread 8 hours over 2 days. You take this into the middle of the week, but you do not, A, bore the jurors. You do not bore the senators. And B, you don't play to the home crowd. You rely on your supporters to spread the news. The people who truly believe will be watching. The people who truly hate will be watching. Most everybody else won't be watching. But those two groups of people have friends. Their social media exists. They can spread the word. You don't have to say the same thing 15 times over again and put people to sleep. Part of any jury situation is you got to try to appeal to the jury. And one way, after the slow sort of Chinese water torture of last week, to ingratiate yourself to some of the jurors is to not torture them more than you absolutely have to. There's only one Republican out there, and of course it's Mitt Romney, saying, well, I'll probably vote for witnesses. Why? Because Mitt Romney's Mitt Romney. That's who he is. That's what he does. That's who he's always going to be. You want to change that, move to Utah and run against him. Otherwise, just ignore him. He's not that important. The other senators are much more important. But it's not just David Axelrod, by the way. There was a funny moment, which if you are Chuck Todd or a Democrat, was another heartbreaking moment that happened on Meet the Press along the same lines, making the case because, you know, one focus group in Chicago doesn't really tell you much of anything. Could be just a fluke. Well, Chuck Todd brought up a Maureen Dowd column about how nobody cares about this. Nobody's paying attention. Nobody gives a damn. Even if Donald Trump did all of the things the Democrats are saying he did, even if he did, the American people don't care. I honestly don't care. But Amy Walter of, I believe, National Public Radio, she added to it as well. Listen to this clip. Democrats in the media lamenting the fact that after months of this and years of this, really, and especially the week that they're it's like Christmas in January. This is the week that Democrats have been building to and working toward since Donald Trump won the election. Listen to how upset they are. And when they acknowledge that nobody gives a damn.
Just say, Maureen Dowd had a fascinating little nugget in her column today. I want to put it up here. One Democratic Senate staffer mourned the apathy. Our phones aren't ringing, he told me. Nobody cares. It's the saddest thing ever. The fact that you don't have even Democrats storming the Capitol of protests, Amy, it's not there.
I was in Iowa. No one talked about this.
What if you threw an impeachment and nobody came? The American people don't care. The American people look at this and they go, I don't. This is very confusing. It seems really stupid. And oh, by the way, if Joe Biden is corrupt, I'd like to know it. What's the problem with trying to find out? Because if you think about it, Democrats have been saying all along that, my God, Donald Trump just wanted the announcement of this impeachment or of this investigation into Joe Biden because he wanted to interfere in the 2020 elections. Now, John Bolton is saying that he didn't just want the announcement of the investigation, didn't care if the investigation happened. Allegedly, John Bolton is saying that he wanted the actual investigation. He wanted to find out if Joe Biden was corrupt or not. Those are two different things, two completely different things. Democrats weren't saying that he wanted an actual investigation. He said he just wanted the announcement. Didn't matter if they did it or not, because he wanted to sort of taint Biden with this stank about he was corrupt. Well, who's telling the truth? Who knows? Neither one can make their case, or the Democrats can't make their case. It's kind of telling. They're just going along, flying along. But even after all of that, and even the possibility that Donald Trump might have done all these things, oh my God, can you believe this? The American people don't care. I never really understood how, you know, the idea of investigating Joe Biden was somehow interfering in the election. If an investigation turned up nothing, then boom, Joe Biden should be asking. That's the argument Democrats have been making about Donald Trump. If he's got nothing to hide, he should give us everything we want and then some. Well, if Joe Biden has nothing to hide, he should be out there calling for an investigation himself. He should open up his records. His son should open up his records. But they aren't. It's weird. They want to imply guilt for Donald Trump because of him exerting his rights. Joe Biden isn't exerting any rights. There's no criminal investigation in the United States into Joe Biden. Any corruption that would have taken place would have taken place overseas. He couldn't be charged. You can't go to Ukraine and kill somebody, then come back to the United States and face a murder trial for having killed somebody in Ukraine. That doesn't work that way. Same thing with corruption. But the American people would sure like to know whether or not somebody was helping their family get rich off of their position of public trust, wouldn't you think? But it escapes these people. They just don't understand that the American people don't care. If you hated Donald Trump going into this, you hate Donald Trump now. Yeah. If you hated Donald Trump, you already hated Donald Trump on 10. There is no 11, so you couldn't go up any higher. If you love Donald Trump, this hasn't changed your mind one bit whatsoever. It's kind of funny. Let's do this quickly because we're running out of time. Adam Schiff was on a couple of the Sunday shows. Of course he was. He knew he would get a slobbering interview because it's media. And he was asked about a Donald Trump tweet over the weekend where the president tweeted that Schiff has yet to pay a price for his lying. Because it's true. Schiff has not. Schiff will not. Schiff lives in a safe district. He'll be fine. The only price Adam Schiff could pay is if Democrats lose the House of Representatives and he is thrown back in the minority and he loses his gavel. He loses his power. He will lose his luster. He'll still be a cable media darling, but he'll be a bigger embarrassment and he won't be able to get his way in the House. So the media is trying to pretend that Donald Trump in that tweet was threatening Adam Schiff. He has yet to pay a price, as if someday he will make him pay that price. Because they all believe that Donald Trump is Hitler and he will somehow come out and do a purge of people, even though Hitler was a socialist. Hitler was a man of the left. Listen to Jake Tapper. I think this is Jake Tapper. And Adam Schiff talk about the threat that the president made against him.
Kowski, Collins, and Ernst, all three Republican senators who are might be open to witnesses, thought you got too personal.
Well, I don't think it was personal to refer to this CBS story. Mm-hmm. What may be personal, though, and I think I have to be very candid about this, is I made the argument that it's going to require moral courage to stand up to this president. And this is a wrathful and vindictive president. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And if you think there is, look at the president's tweets about me today, saying that I should pay a price.
You take that as a threat?
I think it's intended to be.
Okay, it wasn't Jake Tapper, it was Chuck Todd. Jake Tapper, later on his show, talked about it being a threat with a Republican Senator Lankford, which is another ridiculous exchange. You don't think that's a threat? We got people sending pipe bombs to people in the media. Lankford said, yeah, you know, there you got somebody who listened to your rhetoric on the left about health care and took a gun and tried to kill a bunch of Republicans on there. There are crazies everywhere, but they try to blame everything on Donald Trump and they absolve themselves of any guilt whatsoever. The only problem for Adam Schiff, and it was weird how none of these media types seemed to pick up on this, was that just 2 weeks earlier, I believe on the same show, I believe this was Meet the Press, Nancy Pelosi was talking about Republicans not calling or allowing witnesses in the Senate trial. And guess what she said Republicans would have to pay? A price. Here she is.
It's about a fair trial. They take an oath to have a fair trial, and we think that would be with witnesses and documentation. So that dynamic has, now the ball is in their court to either do that or pay a price for not doing it.
Or pay a price for not doing it. Now, were there breathless panels convened on cable news and the Sunday shows about Nancy Pelosi, is she threatening Republicans? No, there wasn't. It's weird how that works out. It's different when Democrats do it to Democrats than it is when Republicans do it. Well, look, when you know that the referees are wearing your uniform, you might try to get away with things you otherwise wouldn't, because you can. It's corruption. It's full-blown corruption. Tomorrow I'm going to get to Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders basically admitting, I have no idea how much my plans are going to cost. I don't care. I'm going to propose them anyway. I suck. I'm horrible. I'm insane. Because he's horrible. He's insane. And he sucks. But we're just up against the clock, as happens every time when my mouth gets going. I appreciate you listening. Thank you so much. Patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast if you would like to help out, support the program or any way, shape, or form, or just the Facebook shares and the tweets and all that stuff. And the most importantly, the word of mouth, your testimonial, it makes all the difference. Thank you for all of it. It's Monday, but that means tomorrow's Tuesday, and we're well on our way to the weekend. I'll see you then.
Only his will goes. He is a dictator.